Hello everyone, I'm Lindley Bilby and I manage a program called Blood Matters in Victoria, Australia. The program aims to support and enhance best practice in patient blood management and for the stewardship of blood and blood products. And this is all aimed at improving patient outcomes. I've also had the privilege of chairing the International Society of Blood Transfusion Practitioner Group. In this podcast, we're going to continue to talk about patient blood management, which we will abbreviate to PBM. PBM is a widely established international initiative with a multidisciplinary approach to reduce transfusion. There are a wide range of strategies that have been designed to improve patient outcomes by managing and preserving the patient's own blood. For listeners who would like to learn about the strategies such as preventing and reducing iatrogenic anemia and promoting the use of single unit transfusion where it's safe to do so, please listen to our previous podcast. This podcast will highlight PBM programs that are in place in different countries to give you an idea of how they can work. The principles and benefits of PBM are well documented in the literature. PBM or activities supporting PBM are one of the many activities that the transfusion practitioner may undertake as part of their role. If you are not sure what a transfusion practitioner is, you can go back and listen to our very first podcast, which was about what is a transfusion practitioner. We are very fortunate to be able to bring you this podcast thanks to the support of the International Society of Blood Transfusion, known as ISBT. ISBT is a global community of professionals sharing knowledge to enhance transfusion practice and blood management. The Society does this by providing opportunities for advancing knowledge and education and by advocacy for the welfare of blood donors and patients. ISBT has many working groups that focus on specific topics and areas of practice. And one of those is the transfusion practitioner subgroup. So today I will interview Kylie Hobson, who's the clinical nurse consultant in blood management at the Princess Charles Hospital in Queensland, Australia. In the podcast, you'll also hear from Claire O'Reilly from Canada, and she will be chatting with Tara Winkler from Vancouver General Hospital in Canada. And then we'll hear from Rachel Moss, who's a transfusion practitioner in London, as she talks to hemovigilance nurse specialists from Leuven in Belgium. She'll be talking to Els Heiler and Charla Deville. So now I'm going to start with Kylie. So Kylie, so nice of you to join us today. So can you please tell the listeners what is your role?
Thank you. So as mentioned, I'm the clinical nurse consultant for our patient blood management program at the Prince Charles Hospital. And within that program, my portfolio is preoperative anemia management. So that's initiating, assessing and investigating any anemia and iron deficiency and ensuring the patients are managed appropriately in preparation for the surgery.
Well, that's great. Thanks, Scott. So how was PBM or anemia management program at the Prince Charles Hospital established?
So back in 2011, the Queensland government implemented transfusion nurses to several of the hospitals across Queensland who actually had the highest blood utilisation. Prince Charles Hospital was lucky and they received one full-time equivalent clinical nurse consultant. That was later reduced back to only a 0.8 FTE due to the government cutbacks at the time. In 2012, my colleague Bronwyn applied for and was successful in applying for a government grant, and it was called an innovation grant from Metro North, and this provided funding for a blood management CNC to implement bleeding management strategies. The improved patient outcomes and cost savings that were seen provided evidence to be able to support a permanent increase in FTE by another 0.6. And then in 2014, Bronwyn applied again for another innovation grant through Metro North, which provided funding for a 6-month project that was to implement anemia management strategies. So during that, we actually observed patient outcomes and cost savings over the next 12 months. And we provided evidence to our Metro North to enable us to actually increase our FTE again by another 0.8. And just so you're aware, when I say Metro North, I'm actually referring to a combined health service that's provided by 4 large tertiary hospitals, 2 rural hospitals, and they're just in the process of actually establishing 3 smaller satellite hospitals, which are opening within the next few months as well.
So, Kylie, that's very interesting and sounds like, you know, funding proposals and demonstrating how it does save money and also include increased patient outcomes has been very successful. But could you actually briefly outline how the program works and specifically your role in that?
Sure. So our program actually has an overarching governance through our blood management committee. This committee meets on a quarterly basis and it has multidisciplinary membership from across all services of the hospital. So with this, we escalate any issues or risks and concerns to our safety and quality committee for action. And of course, we implement changes in strategies, educating staff and updating policies and procedures to support the strategies for blood management at the hospital. The three CNCs, we actually work autonomously, but also collaboratively to make sure that we drive and continue to support PBM strategies that are aligned with the three pillars of patient blood management, also the National Blood Authority Patient Blood Management Guidelines and the Australian Commission National Safety and Quality Health Service Standards, especially obviously Standard 7 blood management. We have the three roles, so preoperative anemia, which is my role. Then we have a haemovigilance and transfusion role, that's my colleague Michelle. And then the haemostasis and blood management role, which is occupied by Bronwyn. Bronwyn's actually currently undertaking her nurse practitioner training. So that's really exciting as an advancement for our blood management program as well across Australia.
Thank you.
I hope that answers that question.
So do you have data that you could share with us to show how the PBM program has reduced transfusions?
Yeah, absolutely. So certainly the program has improved blood product utilisation. We have seen that with the introduction of patient blood management strategies, a significant reduction in our red cell utilisation especially. So we've gone from using 7,500 units in 2011-12 when we established the program down to 5,000 units per annum by around 2014-15. And this seems to have stabilised. We now utilise between 4,000 and 5,000 units every year. And that's really exciting, especially when we consider that our hospital separations have actually increased over this time by about 20,000 separations each year. The other things we've achieved through the bleeding management protocol, and this was actually published by Bronwyn Pearce and some other colleagues in Vox Sanguis in 2015, actually showed decreased incidence of red cell transfusion, increased appropriate use of cryoprecipitate in theatre, a reduction in exploration for bleeding, a reduction in superficial chest and leg wounds, infections, and decreased mean length of stay from operation to discharge. And I guess one of the exciting things, especially for our business managers, was that there was a reduction in blood acquisition of $1.2 million over 15 months. Other things that we have achieved is a audit of our platelets. So this was before the 5-day shelf life. We were wasting a lot of them because we couldn't utilise them. The audit actually showed that these were being pre-ordered before surgical procedures and not necessarily based on the clinical need of that patient. So the audit's evidence and as well as other evidence suggested that this was really not the most appropriate way to manage the use of the platelets. And so excitingly, they no longer are pre-ordered and we have subsequently saw a reduction even prior to the change to the 5-day shelf life. With the orthopaedics department and the implementation of the anemia program, prior to implementation, we had 22% of our major joints actually being transfused. So within 12 months, we saw a reduction down to 13% of these patients being transfused. Our last audit, which was for 21-22, actually showed that we're now down to transfusion in only 8% of these patients. And that seems to have been steady for the last number of years. So, yeah. And when we look at our data in regards to wastage, as a percentage of net issued, we are below the benchmark with our peer group, our state group, and also national levels for all of our fresh blood products. So, and we can attest that to the strategies that we've implemented.
Wow, that's great. That sounds really interesting and some really important reductions there that can be easily demonstrated. So can you tell us how, I think you've kind of briefly mentioned earlier about the program was funded by specific grants, but has that continued on?
No, so now that our program is wholly funded by our surgical and critical care program within the hospital, and the hospital receives funding both from our state and federal governments. We actually also generate some income within the program by capturing our telephone consultation appointments with patients, and that is processed through our health information department.
Okay, well, that sounds great. So, Carly, what advice would you give others who are thinking about establishing a PBM program?
I think it's important to achieve ongoing success. It's always about the foundations of the program. So making sure that it's achieved through sound knowledge base, engagement of key stakeholders, engaging those people who are drivers of change, gaining executive support is a big thing. And also using baseline and data and then reviewing that data as the evidence of the change that has been achieved. Because obviously all these things are needed to get the funding and have that funding supported on an ongoing basis from the executive as well.
Yes, that's so right. I mean, it all does really rely on funding. So thanks so much for your time and for your brief introduction of what's going on in the Prince Charles Hospital. That sounds really good. But how could the listeners find further information about your program, specifically about your anemia management program?
Sure. So we are currently working on a number of publications. My colleague Bronwyn Pearce has several publications, so if they googled her name they would find a lot of information about lots of blood management strategies and or did a literature research. But yeah, we are excitedly working on a lot of the anemia publications at the moment, just finding that time and getting involved in getting the right people involved as well to publish those. But otherwise, everyone is more than welcome to email us. I can let you know that email address right now. It's capital T, capital P, capital C, capital H, hyphen, capital B, P, sorry, capital B, capital M, at health.qld.gov.au.
Great. Well, that's really very good. So, Carly, thank you so much for your time. And I'm sure if listeners would want to reach out and to find more information, they could contact you. If they need to contact, they can contact us through ISBT and we could certainly redirect any inquiries related to that. So thanks very much, Carly.
Lovely. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Hi, Tara. Thank you for joining us today. And I'll get started by asking you to tell listeners about your role.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here. I'm the transfusion medicine nurse clinician for Vancouver Coastal Health Authority in the province of BC in Canada. We are a region that health authority that it covers probably about 58,000 square kilometers with 11 different sites that do transfusions. I work with a partner clinician to support transfusion practice in all the sites that provide transfusions.
Thanks. And Tara, can you tell us about Canada's Choosing Wisely program and particularly the single unit transfusion campaign?
So Choosing Wisely is actually a global initiative that's designed to get clinicians to think about what they're doing with their patients and to do only necessary testing or treatments with their patients. So the single unit transfusion is part of the Using Blood Wisely movement, which is a sort of like a a smaller movement within the Choosing Wisely initiative. The goal is to decrease the number of inappropriate red blood cell transfusions in hospitals using evidence-based guidelines. And the focus is on inpatient adults, because the guidelines, Claire, as you know, are very different for children and neonates. So they haven't quite moved into that area of population. And it also sort of leaves out the emergency department, because it doesn't cover sort of massive transfusion or massive hemorrhage situations. It's meant to primarily be for stable, not actively bleeding adults. And the purpose is to conserve Canada's blood supply and improve the patient experience, and also to reduce the cost of transfusion. So far, we have 226 hospitals across the country participating, and it accounts for about 71% of transfused red blood cells in Canada. And they have 104 sites have been designated, and this is information that was current as of late last year.
Thanks, Tara. So how did you go about implementing single unit transfusion in your health authority?
So at the moment, we only have one hospital in the authority who has the designation of using Blood Wisely. The plan is to roll it out at our other major centers, but I can't take credit for a lot of this. A lot of the heavy lifting was done before I started in my role, but they mainly created a pre-printed order set that focused on ordering only one unit at a time. So it sort of had a default order sentence of one unit, and then an option underneath for the provider to order more. And they did a lot of teaching with physician groups. So lots of physician noon rounds, education rounds, showing evidence, providing the literature that supports the benchmarks and guidelines for the Using Blood Wisely campaign. And recently, with the implementation of our new electronic medical record at BGH, we also now have an alert that pops up when providers order red blood cells that are considered outside of the Using Blood Wisely guidelines.
Thanks. And what are the outcomes?
So VGH, Vancouver General Hospital, has 81% of our transfusions are single unit transfusions now across the hospital. The benchmark for using Blood Wisely is that 65% or more of your transfusions should be single unit. So we've actually done really, really well. And I give a lot of credit to the physicians, the nurses who have been involved in this, and the physicians for changing their ordering practices, and the nurses for adapting to the slight increase in their workflow, i.e. they have to give a unit of blood every day instead of giving two units of blood in one day and then not having to give blood the next. But they've worked really hard, and I think they've done a great job.
And Tara, how do you think your role as the transfusion medicine clinician assisted in the implementation and the success of the campaign?
I think because as a clinician, I'm not a physician, so I don't have the same level of responsibilities that a physician has in supporting the service from a medical standpoint. And I also, as the clinician, have developed and built a lot of clinical connections with various areas. And I think that that's really helped to support the education side of things. It provides physicians and nurses with a contact person if they have questions, who's always sort of accessible. I'm never on call. I'm always available, you know, during business hours. So, and I think it's a little easier to approach a clinician, like a nurse clinician, than it is to approach a physician. And I think that that's had a lot to do with it. And I just make it a point of getting to know people. And I think that that's also been very, very important.
That's great, Tara. And what advice or hints do you have for our listeners who are looking to implement a similar program?
First off, I would say get your evidence in order. So physicians, as you guys probably know, need a lot of convincing to change practice, and they like lots of evidence that's sort of relevant to their practice area. You really need a physician champion to support the program, who can connect you through to the physician groups that you might need to communicate with. There's a lot of really good tips from the Using Blood Wisely website that's very helpful. They provide a lot of resources, but I think overall, get your ducks in a row before you start doing this. Make sure you have a very clear plan and try to engage physician groups early and ask them questions about why are they doing what they're doing. And then target your education and your strategy around what are they actually doing and the reasons for that.
Thanks so much for your time today, Tara. How would listeners find further information about Choosing Wisely program?
So the Using Blood Wisely has a website, and it's usingbloodwisely.ca. Choosing Wisely also has the overarching website, which is choosingwisely.ca. There's probably offshoots of this and just in a lot of other countries. So I Google search Choosing Wisely, and that hopefully will bring it up. But for Canada, it's choosingwisely.ca.
Thanks very much, Tara.
Thanks for having me.
And so today, my guests come from Belgium. They are two transfusion practitioners, Els and Shana, from the University Hospital of Leuven in Belgium. And we're going to talk about their anemia program. But before we go any further, I'm going to let you to introduce themselves. So Els, please, can you introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Els Huygen. I'm working in the University Hospitals of Leuven. As I'm a transfusion practitioner nurse, or nurse specialist, as we call it, in hemovigilance. Since already 8 years, I'm working in the hemovigilance part. We take care of the whole transfusion process in the hospital, coaching of the nursing department, tracing of blood components, developing evidence-based scientific projects, and I let my colleague introduce herself and the hospital sites.
So I am Shana de Wilde. I'm the colleague of Els Huygen, so also a transfusion practitioner or specialist nurse. And I do this now for already 2 years. I combine it as a nurse on the intensive care. So we take care of the transfusion process, like Els said. We are a big hospital with around 1,700 beds, and we have around 35,000 transfusions a year. So our role as a transfusion practitioner is very important. I think that's it.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Els and Shana, for that introduction, so people know who you are. So I'm going to start with you first, Els, and then Shana, if there's anything you want to add after Els has spoken, please do add to it. So how will you develop the anemia assessment program in your hospital?
We are now doing like the start of the anemia assessment program. So we're starting with the pre-assessment on the cardiology department, just to predict the level of anemia on the patients at this moment. Afterwards, we will set up a program in co-working with anesthesia department, cardiology department, and the hematology to assess the patients 6 weeks prior to their operation and give the needed ferrum supplements if prescribed. With, of course, control of all the parameters, the levels in the blood, pre-supplements, post-supplements, pre-OK, post-OK, everything in the program, so we can see if it's effective and what's the outcome. So we are still in the beginning of our program, but we have something.
Yeah. we already made a script, and now it's the purpose is now to develop it with the script. Yeah.
Excellent. It's very exciting at the start of a project. And I bet if we come back in a year's time, it'll be great to see how you're doing. So I'm not sure who wants to answer this, maybe Els again and then Shana. How is the program funded?
It's not extra funding, it's just our job time. So it's in our job time, some of our things we have like year goals to set, and one of our goals is set up the anemia program. So yep. Not extra funding.
That would be nice, wouldn't it, to have extra funding? But anyway, so
maybe later in the process.
Well, actually, I think there's something in that, Shana. Sometimes you need to what we call have a proof of concept, demonstrate that something is effective and working. And then, as absolutely, you may well find then that you get funding because it's got some traction. What outcomes would you like to measure from the program?
The expected outcomes at this moment are the pre-intervention levels of hemoglobin and the ferrum in the cardiology patient. And then we can set up our intervention program. The big outcomes is optimizing the preoperative status of the patient and probably associated with less blood transfusions and better care for the patient. And indirect, we hope less risk for transfusion reactions.
I think that's the main outcome we would like to have.
Yeah,
for the moment.
No, I think that sounds great. And the great thing about this program is it really is focusing on the patient, both their well-being preoperatively and, as you say, reducing those transfusion risks. It'd be interesting to see what you both say about this. So I'm just going to change it around a bit. Shana, I'm going to start with you first. How did your role as the transfusion nurse assist with the implementation and what you hope will be a successful program?
I think as a transfusion practitioner that we have an important role in coordinating everything to see if every department that helps with it, that they know what to do. And if there is something not going well, that we can give feedback and that they can improve. So with that, also the communication with the departments is very important and a big role for us. And besides that, also the data extraction and the interpretation of the data is a very big part of our job. So I think that's the most important thing. And if we have all the results, then we can organize as well the setup for the intervention. Like, we now know what the status of the patient is. If they need iron or something else, where are we going to give it? How are we going to organize that for the patients to improve their status? I think anything else
you think that being a transfusion practitioner is crucial to this program?
I think that we have like the coordinating role, so we can overview all the departments and put them together and let them work together. And at the end also give feedback of the results. So I think that's one of our important roles. But Shana did set everything, I think.
No, I think that's excellent because, being a transfusion practitioner, I don't think any of these programs run effectively without having us there. So the last question for you both, and Els, I'm going to start with you, is what advice or hints would you give to our listeners if they were about to start this anemia program, and then anything else that you can add later, Shana. But Els, let's start with you.
Well, the start is of all those things is a good preparation, I think. Like, what is your script? What is your knowledge? Read some of the information in the literature, make a script that works in your hospital, and look who are your key stakeholders. The people within the departments where you can connect with that have also the same interests, then you can use them to infect their department and let's start your program. We have like one anesthesiologist. That's really interested. He's really interested in PBM. So we always talk with him and make up our mind with him, like, what are you thinking? What's your mind a bit? What was your opinion on it? And then he can go to his department and defend our IDs. So it's handy to have some stake key holders to get them with you and have your own script and preparation. Then we also see that important to have easily access to all your lab data. So you can easily record that's the patient, that's his problems, that was his anemia level, that's what we have to do, and to extract all those data of your program, patient care program. And knowing how the preoperative consultation is set up is also really handy. What are their way of working? And least, like, start small. Take it really small. We developed little things in the cardiology department, and then it can go further on. But we start really small, but only the cardiology, step by step. In the big hospital here with a lot of wards, you can't start with everyone. That's, I think, the advice.
Very wise. Shana, anything else you want to add?
Nope, I cannot add anything. She said it all.
I think
a very good preparation is indeed the best start for a project like this. Step by step.
Yeah, I think that preparation, start small. I think they're very wise words. Excellent. Well, thank you both very much, Els and Shana. Thank you for sharing your time and your experiences with us. We know that PBM is evidence-based. We can see that it's multidisciplinary. You've already talked about bringing on board your champions, your anesthesiologist. So I think that's what you need to do. Find somebody who's with you, that wants to work with you to manage and conserve the patient's own blood, and of course reducing the risk of transfusion. Transfusion practitioners, which is what we are, has such an important role to play, as we've heard today. You're critical to this project being a success, and you can be involved in so many ways. We know there are different ways to approach PBM, and these have to be adapted to meet the specific requirements for your organization. And as you say, there's no extra funding, it's just your time. And then from that, we'll develop this. Thank you so much to our listeners to joining us today. There are far more resources than we can even tell you about on this podcast. If you look at the ISBT website, the Clinical Transfusion Working Party have lots of resources, and the Transfusion Practitioners website has so many resources that we put on there, both about PBM and the transfusion practitioner role. If you have any feedback about the podcast, please use the questions available on the podcast platform, and you can link in with us by visiting the ISBT website, checking out the Transfusion Practitioner Working Party, and there's far more details about us as a subgroup. We really look forward to having you on our next episode, where we're going to start looking at how to build the case for a transfusion practitioner role.